encourage everyone here to open their Bibles with us and follow along, because we hope to teach nothing but the Word of God, and we stand by that Word. This morning as we gather, as we typically do on every Sunday morning, we reflect on the sacrifice that Jesus made. We like to take time, as the Bible points out to us, to reflect on all the various things that He's done for us in His death on the cross. And if you look on the screens to my left and my right, you see some artist's rendering, an aesthetic, pleasing view, and artistically speaking, of what that cross might have looked like on this hill of Calvary. For a lot of people, this image, perhaps, is frightening. They maybe put themselves in that position and think, man, what a terrible thing to go through. Or perhaps it's frightening on a personal level. They see that and know what it represents, and they're scared of that. They don't want to face the truth that it presents in their life. Maybe it's abrasive. Perhaps people look at that and just think that's a divisive thing that tears people apart, that it proclaims truth when in actuality it's false. Maybe they get happy. Maybe you think of joy. Maybe you think of your personal relationship with Jesus Christ and the salvation that He offers you via that cross. And that brings you joy. You know, that imagery of the cross really brings a lot of different things to our mind, even as Christians. There's a ton of different images, analogies, various things that the Bible points out to us as being true about that cross. But I want us to turn, first of all, to John chapter 8. John chapter 8, we've had a couple lessons here in the past week based out of this text, because the elders here at Jordan Park have decided that these are going to be essentially our theme verses for the year. Verses that we want to establish our Bible classes on, that emphasize basic truths that we teach from the Bible. And we want to emphasize these truths even in the preaching publicly, as we are this morning. Look in verse 31 and 32. Verses 31 and 32 of John chapter 8. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed Him, "If you continue in My word, then you are truly disciples of Mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." For those of us that are familiar to this group here at Jordan Park, you know these verses. We've been talking about these for several weeks, but perhaps if you're a visitor, you've maybe heard these verses before. They're used in a lot of different contexts to prove a lot of different points. People refer to these verses even in just general religious discussions for all kinds of reasons. So perhaps just in your dealings and social endeavors with your friends, you've heard these referenced, or perhaps you've read them yourself. Jesus is really making a very bold claim in these verses. He says, if you continue in My word, He's establishing some authority to what He's saying. If you continue in My word, then you are disciples of Mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Jesus is really putting Himself on a pedestal in a way here and saying, the words that I have and following Me reveals truth. It just inherently reveals it. That's what I am, and that's what My words will show to you, is truth. But that truth just doesn't stop there. That truth has a purpose. And that purpose is to make you free, or set you free, as your translation may read. Isn't that a bold claim? Isn't that really, some of us might think that's really audacious of Jesus to make that claim. Like, whoa, back up a minute. In the society that I live in, no one's really right. We all have our different opinions, and we all do things differently. And my way may be more efficient in some aspects, but it doesn't mean it's right or wrong. Well, Jesus here is saying that if you listen to My words and you follow Me, that is what brings truth. You'll see truth, and that truth will set you free. Look in Isaiah chapter 61. I want us to go back to the Old Testament here for a few minutes. Isaiah chapter 61. In Isaiah chapter 61, in the first two verses, I want us to read. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the afflicted. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and freedom to prisoners, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. And I would like to stop there for our reading. This is an interesting passage in a lot of different ways. But I want us to consider, first of all, one thing that this might have been alluding to. In Leviticus chapter 25, we have for us a recording of what the year of Jubilee is. And in verse 10, we have it identified as basically every 50th year on the seventh cycles of Sabbath years. On that 50th year, there's to be a proclamation made throughout the land. And any debts that people had amongst the Israelites, any dealings that they had in trying to pay off those debts, whether they had become a slave to someone else because of their debts, things like that. In the year of Jubilee, they're made null and void. Everything's reset that year. Every 50th year, everybody's debts and things are reset. And so in that sense, as we read Isaiah 61, you can imagine Israelites reading this and thinking of the year of Jubilee, and you can see how it makes sense. Because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the afflicted. You can imagine if you're afflicted, you're in this debt, you have no way of paying it, maybe you're serving somebody else, your Jubilee rolls around. That's erased. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to captives, and that might have significant meaning if you're at that point a captive or enslaved to someone, and freedom to prisoners. And then here, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord, and that is perhaps a direct reference to this favored year of the Lord, the year of Jubilee in which he sets these captives free. So you can imagine if you're an Israelite reading this, you're thinking, yeah, that's the year of Jubilee. Every 50th year, I'm set free, or my neighbors are set free, or I'm setting people free. But notice in the first verse, that isn't really what's being talked about here. I mean, sure, it invokes this idea of the year of Jubilee, but it's really putting it on someone instead of some time. Look in verse 1 of Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me. And then he goes on to say the same things that we just talked about. One person is going to essentially live out the year of Jubilee in their lives. God has appointed one person to do this for others. That's a fundamental change in how things have been done in the past. There was just a set time that would kind of occur every 50 years that this would happen. But now one person has been given the authority and the Spirit by God to do that himself. Turn to Luke chapter 4 with me. In Luke chapter 4. I want to read verses 16 through 23. Luke chapter 4, verses 16 through 23. And he, speaking of Jesus, came to Nazareth where he had been brought up, and was his custom, he entered the synagogue on the Sabbath and stood up to read. So here he's about to read a passage to Jews, who, as we talked about in Isaiah 61, would understand what the year of Jubilee meant in that passage. And the book of the prophet of Isaiah was handed to him, and he opened the book and found the place where it was written. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set free those who are oppressed, and to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. And he closed the book, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down and fixed. And the eyes of all in the synagogue were fixed on him. I want to stop there just for a second. So Jesus, you can imagine, he just walks into the synagogue. Bunch of Jews, Israelites by heritage. And he's given the book of Isaiah. And so he opens it up exactly to what we read in Isaiah 61. And he begins to read. Now remember what they're thinking. They're probably familiar with this passage. They're probably familiar with Leviticus 25 and how they relate to each other. But remember, the key difference in Isaiah 61 is somebody is identified as being the person who's going to be given the right and the Spirit of the Lord to perform these things. Well, Jesus reads this passage, and you can just imagine, he just reads it, closes it up, sits down, and everybody's looking at him like, are you going to say anything, or what's going on here? And as the eyes are fixed on him, in verse 21 we read, and he began to say to them, today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. And all were speaking well of him and wondering at the gracious words which were falling from his lips. And they were saying, is this not Joseph's son? And he said to them, no doubt you'll quote this proverb to me. Physician, heal yourself. Whatever we have heard was done at Capernaum, do here in your hometown as well. So Jesus, after sitting down and everybody staring at him like, are you going to say anything? Are you going to do anything? Everybody's looking at him. He says, today, what you've been reading in Isaiah 61, I'm that person that's going to do that. I'm here to fulfill that. And so he sits down and everybody seems to appreciate, at least minimally, what he's saying here. Because in verse 22 it says, everybody's speaking well of him and wondering at the gracious words which were falling from his lips. If you're in a conversation with somebody and then you leave that conversation and somebody asks you, how did that go? How was that conversation? And you say something to the effect of, gracious words were falling from their lips. That's not a very typical response, right? We don't say things exactly like that, but we know what they mean. We know what it is for somebody to have gracious words. And so if you're to say, they spoke well, I really appreciated what they said, it was really gracious and kind of them, you walk away from that conversation feeling pretty good. And apparently the people listen to what Jesus had to say about this, and they're like, you know what? We're all staring at him, and he's saying good things. Good things are coming out of his mouth. But there's a turn. There's a transition here that they don't quite understand, and probably reflection of their limited understanding of what's happening. So he responds to them after they ask, but wait a minute, isn't this Joseph's son? He says, no doubt you'll quote this proverb to me, physician, heal yourself. Upon hearing the gracious things that Jesus is saying, in the moment it seems that they perceive that, well, this is great. There's somebody here that can do this. We've read about this in Isaiah. We've been waiting for this. Our fathers and their fathers' fathers have been waiting for this person to come along. And we're privileged enough to be here in his midst. But then they start thinking about it. We're like, wait a minute. We know this guy. He's just Joseph's son. And so Jesus takes that opportunity to then point out that that's going to be a stumbling block for them. He says, no doubt you'll quote this proverb to me, physician, heal yourself. Turn to Luke chapter 23. If you would turn to Luke chapter 23, we'll read verses 33 through 37. And while you're turning there, I'm going to read a passage from John chapter 8 that we were in. It's actually right before what we read in John chapter 8, in verse 28. So Jesus said, when you lift up the Son of Man, then you will know that I am He, and I do nothing on my own initiative, but I speak the things as the Father taught me. And that was right before he said, if you continue in my word and you are my disciples, then you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. There's this concept of Jesus having to be lifted up. And here we see it combined with John chapter 8 and what we read in Luke chapter 4. We're going to see a lot of things come together in Luke chapter 23. Beginning in verse 33 of Luke chapter 23, verse 33. When they came to the place called the Skull, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on the right and the other on the left. But Jesus was saying, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. And they cast lots, dividing up his garments among themselves. And the people stood by, looking on, and even the rulers were sneering at him, saying, he saved others, let him save himself, if this is the Christ of God, his chosen one. The soldiers also mocked him, coming up to him, offering him sour wine and saying, "If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself." Now there was also an inscription above him, "This is King of the Jews." Keep in mind, what's occurring here is Jesus has been held in various trials amongst different people. He's not really been found guilty, but they weren't really sure what to do with him. And so the ruler at the time, Pilate, just essentially appeases the Jews, who are getting rather violent and wanting Jesus to be killed. So he just appeases them and lets them do it. And so as they take Jesus to his place of execution, we have an account of some of the things that people were saying to him as he was on the cross. In Luke chapter 4, Jesus says, "You're going to look at me and you're going to see me just as Joseph's son." They say, "Are you not just Joseph's son?" And he says, "No doubt you'll quote this proverb to me, 'Physician, heal yourself.'" Jesus knew back in Luke chapter 4 that people were going to question who he was. They were only going to see the man before them. They were not going to see the God before them. And so in Luke chapter 23, as various people say, "He saved others. Let him save himself if this one is the Christ of God, his chosen one." And others said, "If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself." Is that not exactly what's happening, like we saw him talk about in Luke chapter 4? They see this guy hanging up there. They only see him as the son of Joseph. They do not see him as the king of the Jews. They do not see him as the chosen one or as the Christ of God. And so they're saying, "You know what? You're in trouble. You're sick. You're hurting. Heal yourself. Take yourself down from this cross." Jesus knew that was going to happen. He told them a long time ago that that was going to happen. But Jesus continued to hang on the cross. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 2. Jesus hanging on the cross is the most important thing that has ever happened in the history of mankind. Hands down, the most fundamental and important thing that's happened. And for us to appreciate that, we have to appreciate, as we went into John chapter 8, that Jesus is the one that reveals truth. And in verse 28, the truth that we're focusing on this morning is that the Son of Man had to be lifted up. And in this sense, he had to go onto the cross. And as Luke chapter 4 points out, he had to be the one that was told, "Physician, heal yourself," as he hung there. But he's also the one, as Isaiah 61 points out, who's going to be able to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord, bind the brokenhearted, give sight to the blind, free the prisoners, and release the captive. And Hebrews chapter 2 helps us see that Jesus did that on the cross. If you would, look with me in Hebrews chapter 14, or chapter 2, verse 14. "Therefore, since the children share in flesh and blood, he, being Jesus, himself likewise also partook of the same, that through death he might render powerless him who had the power of death, that is, the devil, and might free those who were through fear of death were subject to slavery all their lives." All of their lives. Jesus, through what he did as a man, and that man subjecting himself on the cross, it says that he proclaims liberty for the captives. Now, it's not in the traditional sense that Isaiah 61 might evoke within the Israelites of this, "I owe a physical debt, I owe some money or some whatever to somebody else, so now I am their property, I am their slave, I work for them." But Jesus here presents this same concept that we see reflected in Isaiah 61, that there is some sort of captivity that's being liberated. But it's a different kind of captivity. It's a spiritual captivity. In Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 15, "That he might release us," or verse 14, "that he might release us from the power of death," that is the devil, "that and might free those who through fear of death were subject to slavery all their lives." Unlike what would happen amongst the Israelites, they were not in slavery all their lives. I mean, if you could just I mean, imagine you were born into slavery somehow within the Israelite system. I mean, if you could just make it to 50 years old, you're going to be a free person. I mean, at some point in your life, most likely, you're going to experience what it is to be free, not to owe debt, and to be able to appreciate the year of Jubilee. But Jesus does something even greater, and that is, for all of our lives, from the moment that we fall short of what God asks of us to do, we're in slavery. There's absolutely nothing we could do about it. Hebrews chapter 2 identifies us as being in slavery all of our lives. And until one who comes can proclaim a spiritual year of Jubilee, the favorable year of the Lord, we're stuck there. Jesus is the one identified in Isaiah 61 as having the Spirit of the Lord upon him and as being appointed for that work. And Hebrews chapter 2 shows us that. Go back to John chapter 8. John chapter 8. And we'll look in verses 34 through 36. So Jesus, in verses 31 and 32, says, I have a truth. If you follow me, you listen to my words, you're going to know that truth. And that truth is going to set you free. Just as we saw in Luke 4 and Isaiah 61, that captivity has been set free in that truth. But right before that in verse 28, he said, but I have to be lifted up. There's a point in which I'm going to have to be lifted up. We saw that again in Luke 4, that people were going to call for him to heal himself. And he fulfills that in Luke 23. But look also in verses 34 through 36. Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is the slave of sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The son does remain forever. So if the son makes you free, you will be free indeed. This is Jesus explaining what he meant by the freedom that he was talking about. There's a truth that has to be understood for this freedom to be obtained. And that truth, as he alluded to right before he spoke in verses 31 and 32, is that he had to be lifted up. And by his lifting up, he's able to say in verses 34 and 36 that those who are slaves of sin are able to be made free. But look how they're made free. Look again in verse 36. So if the Son makes you free, you will be free indeed. It's a conditional statement. The Son has to make us free. Well, did he do that? Luke chapter 23 shows us Jesus hanging on the cross for that very purpose. Hebrews chapter 2 shows us the insight that Jesus had into why he was hanging on the cross. He did it to set people free. And so when we look at John chapter 8, verses 34 through 36, we see the Son choosing to hang and be lifted up so that he can make us free. So if the Son makes you free, you will be free indeed. Has the Son made you free? I mean, Jesus offers himself on the cross for all of humanity. But just as we've seen in these conditional statements throughout John chapter 8, it's conditional. He's offered it unconditionally, but to accept it, there's a condition in that. We see in Romans chapter 6 the imagery of what it is to understand that Christ died for you. And Romans chapter 6 shows that we need to die with Christ. We're buried with him in baptism, and we raise just like Jesus did in new life. If you're here this morning and you've never done that, and you see Jesus as being the Son of God, who came to release you from your captivity of sin, we encourage you to follow what Romans chapter 6 says, if you believe he is who he says he is. If there's some of you here this morning that perhaps have forgotten that, and you chose to forget about Jesus for a while, you said, you know what, I'm going to give myself my own freedom. I don't need Jesus' freedom. I'd encourage you to rethink that and see that Jesus is really the only one that can offer you the freedom that you need. If there's anyone here that we could help this morning, we'd encourage you to come while we stand and sing.